Hello, awesome humans, and welcome to today's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. I'm Natalie, your host, and I'm so grateful you're here. As a quick reminder, we record this podcast with a live virtual audience, so you will hear me respond to questions and comments. If you'd like to join me for Awesome Human Hour Live, I would love it. It's every Wednesday at noon Eastern, and you can sign up by going to happier.com and clicking on Awesome Human Hour. Now, before we dive into today's topic, just take a moment to arrive to this moment right now. This time is for you, and I hope you find today's episode really valuable.
All right, I think we're on. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to Awesome Human Hour. Welcome to your Wednesday. Welcome to this very special edition of Awesome Human Hour, which is a masterclass. Sounds so fancy. A masterclass on resilience to help you to boost your resilience through these uncertain times. I'm so grateful that we get to have this time together and that I get to share some emotional fitness skills with you all. So welcome. If you are here with us live on Zoom, I'm waving at you. Thank you for making the time. I know we have had over 1,000 people register. I think we all need to hear about this topic. This was one of the highest registrations for a single Awesome Human Hour that we've ever seen. So I know we have lots of people who'll be watching the recording. So I want to wave to you virtually in the future on YouTube and as a podcast. So welcome, everyone. I always say this, you are never late. If you're just joining us, we're going to do a special edition Awesome Human Hour today. We're going to talk about emotional fitness skills to fuel and boost your resilience during these uncertain and uneasy times. I've been prepping you guys, so I have something special in store for all of you. But we always begin. So if it's your first time here, welcome in whatever way you're joining us. If you have been joining us often, welcome back. We always begin Awesome Human Hour with a small little ritual to remind ourselves to practice appreciating something within ourselves. So please complete the following sentence. Today, I'm an awesome human because. Today, I'm an awesome human because. And if you're here with us on Zoom, you know what I'm going to say. I would love to see how you completed the sentence. Please put it in chat. Today, I'm an awesome human because it's always really great to see what you share. If you are listening as a podcast, think about it, take a moment and complete the sentence for yourself. If you're watching as a recording on YouTube, put it in the comments. I love to see what you write later. I always look at your comments later. And I will always remind, this is why we always begin this way. We all have a negativity bias in our brain. We all focus naturally much more on what is wrong or negative or frustrating or annoying. And that negativity bias applies to ourselves as well. That is why our inner critic is often much louder than our inner appreciator. So we have to practice balancing out our brain's negativity bias. We're going to be talking about that today. But this is one simple way, and I offer you this practice to begin your day every day. Some of you may know, I'm working on an interactive journal that is based on my book, The Awesome Human Project. I am so excited, and I'm so overwhelmed, and all the things in between. And your daily practice in the journal, among other things, is to say, today I'm an awesome human because we need to practice balancing out the negativity bias and the negativity bias towards ourselves. So we always begin this way. I love that I can see all of your comments on my big screen, and I love that it explodes whenever you share with all the goodness and appreciating things about yourself. Please remember, there is no upside to self-criticism. I spent my life thinking there was. I thought it was helping me improve. It's not the case. There's zero research that shows that. There's a lot of upside to treating yourself with self-compassion. And part of that is recognizing something good about you every day. We're really good at seeing it in others. We kind of suck at seeing it in ourselves. So let this be your reminder. I practice with you once a month. And I hope this is something you do every day. We have people who do this as a team at work. We have leaders who send an email every Monday asking their team to reply with, today I'm an awesome human because. So you can also share this with your work teams, with your colleagues, with your friends. It's a really, really simple, but really impactful practice. Again, we've had lots more folks join us. Welcome. You are never late. Welcome to our special edition Awesome Human Hour, a masterclass on boosting resilience during uncertain times. Before we dive in, and I do want to dive in really quickly because I have a lot that I want to share with you, a special fun and useful, hopefully, announcement. Tomorrow at 7 p.m., I am doing a virtual talk in partnership with the Smithsonian, which is so neat, you guys, right? The Smithsonian runs the largest education program by any museum in the world. So I'm doing a special virtual talk on boosting your emotional fitness. It's at 7 p.m. tomorrow. So if you don't get enough today and you want more, join me tomorrow. Debbie is going to put a link in comments. You have to register. You have to grab a ticket in advance. It is not expensive. It'll be awesome. I'll be sharing slightly different or additional things to what I do today. So yeah, it's really, really, really meaningful to me. For those of you who know me a little bit, you're looking at my art behind me. For those who may not know, I am an art lover. So to be able to partner with a museum to do something like this is really meaningful. So I hope you can join me. And yes, we haven't had an art moment in a while. For those of you who are new, I make art and I make art that brings me joy and I love to share it. I'm wearing, of course, our official Awesome Human hoodie, which has my art on it, which is the same art that is on the cover of my book. And I'm in my art studio today, so I get to show you some new art. The painting, let's see, I don't know, it's over my left shoulder. I guess it's mirrored to you, is a painting that was inspired by my trip to Peru with my family this summer. It's actually one of the only paintings I've done this summer. I've been really busy. And the painting over my right shoulder is inspired by my travels to Santa Fe, one of my favorite places in the world. So I hope there's a lot of science that shows that looking at art actually fuels our emotional health, improves our mental health. So I love when I get a chance to be surrounded by art for Awesome Human Hour. So those are our announcements. One last announcement. I will absolutely leave time for questions at the end. If you have questions, the best place to put them is into Q&A. If you're here on Zoom, the Q&A is at the bottom of your screen. You can also put them in chat. Debbie's awesome and she'll be looking out for them as I talk. So you don't have to hold your question to the end. And if you have to leave early, if you registered, you get a recording. So zero stress. Okay. So with that, actually, let me see. I have this new mic. You guys are going to tell me, I don't know if it's going to activate because I didn't set it up. Let's see if the mic, let's see. Can you guys hear me? No, you can't hear me now. I have to know. It doesn't activate. You can hear me. Oh, okay, good. That's good news. Good. Okay, awesome. All right. So I love to show you my notes. I'm very environmentally friendly, you guys, now, because now I have my iPad. So serious prep. So I don't know why. I love to show you all my prep for our Awesome Human Hour. So I have lots that I want to share. So let's dive in and let's talk about emotional fitness skills to boost your resilience during these ongoing, uncertain and trying times, right? Oof. So let's start with first things first. And if you are familiar with my work, you've probably heard me say this a lot, but uncertainty is really challenging for the human brain. So, you know, uncertainty is part of life, but in the last couple of years, we've all faced so much uncertainty with COVID, with changing work in office, virtual, hybrid, just everything in our lives, our kids. So it's been really tough. And this is why I wanted to kind of dedicate this Awesome Human Hour to this topic. Probably every single keynote that I've done in the last many months has been about sharing emotional fitness skills to help teams and companies and organizations better handle this ongoing challenging time. And so my motivation for doing this masterclass is I wanted to offer some of these skills to our community so that you can practice them with your teams, with your colleagues, with your families, So that's my bigger why for addressing this topic. And I'm going to hopefully we'll have enough time. I have three emotional fitness skills and very, very tangible ways to practice them to share with you today. But we'll see. You guys know that I like to talk a lot if you've been coming for a while. So let's see if I can get to three, but that's the goal. So let's actually begin with a scenario. Okay. So here's the scenario. This is a little quiz. Okay. So here is a scenario, probably one we're all familiar with. Here's a scenario. You have a really important meeting. And let's say this is an in-person meeting. So you're going to drive there and you check the traffic, you know where you're going and you leave for the meeting and you have plenty of time to make it. Awesome. Here's scenario number one. You get on the highway and standstill traffic, completely unexpected. Usually there's no traffic at this time, standstill traffic, and you can see up ahead that there's an accident. So you're not moving. Obviously you're stressed out because you're probably going to be late to the meeting or miss it entirely, but you can see there's an accident and that's why you're standstill traffic. That's scenario number one. Scenario number two, same deal. You're going to drive to this important meeting and you start driving, you get on the highway, everything is wonderful, no traffic, you're smooth driving along. And then all of a sudden everything slows to a crawl, which is weird. It's middle of the day. And then it clears up again. So you're like, oh, okay, going to start driving. And then again, everything like slows to a crawl and this keeps happening. And you're probably also going to be late to the meeting. So these are your two scenarios. So this is a great opportunity for those who are live here on Zoom to participate. Here is my question to you. Which of the two scenarios is more stressful? The first one, in both scenarios, you're going to be late to the meeting. But which is more stressful? The first scenario where standstill, unexpected traffic, you can see there's an accident. Or the second scenario where no traffic, some traffic, no traffic, some traffic. All right, I'm going to pause because I want to look. Oh, you guys are too easy and too smart. Oh, okay, okay, we have some challenges. Okay. All right, so we have a lot more votes for number two, but we have some votes for number one. And I love how some folks are just, both are really stressful. Agreed, both are stressful. Which one is more stressful? Okay, so we have, I'm gonna say, I don't know, 75% of people say number two and about 25% of people saying one. If you're listening or watching the recording, answer it for yourself, just to keep you honest, just interesting. All right, drum roll, which I don't have, but I'm going to tell you the answer. The answer is that scenario number two is actually a lot more stressful for most of us mortal humans. And the reason is it has a lot more uncertainty in it, right? In the first scenario, you can see standstill traffic. You know why there's traffic. There's an accident up ahead. So even though you're stressed out, you're going to be late to the meeting, you know what's going on. There's an accident. And so you're not going to move. So yes, you are stressed, but there's certainty. Your brain knows what's going on. In the second scenario, a lot of uncertainty. The traffic keeps changing. You have no idea. Your brain has no idea. Is it going to be lots of traffic? Is it going to be less traffic? And so the second scenario is actually a lot more stressful because of uncertainty. Uncertainty is the hardest thing for the human brain to handle. Absolutely the hardest thing. And this is a time for a little mini neuroscience lesson. Again, if you're familiar with my work, you know, there always is one. There will not be a test, I promise. But here's a bit of a neuroscience lesson about uncertainty, because it is really, really, really important to understand. So your brain's number one job is not to make you happy, is not to give you a good life, is not to make sure you're on time to a meeting. Your brain's number one job is to keep you safe from danger. Your survival is what your brain is focused on, which is kind of nice because I think being alive is a good thing. But that means your brain has developed certain patterns of reacting to things that is really, really essential to understand to then help yourself get through challenging things. So because your brain is so focused on survival, it is always looking out for possible danger, physical danger, psychological danger. This is what your brain is constantly focused on. And when things are uncertain, your brain gets really stressed out. Why? because it doesn't know what's going to be happening and it doesn't know how it's going to keep you safe from danger. Uncertainty, the unknown are really stressful for the human brain for that reason. Your brain does a couple things when it faces any kind of uncertainty. The first is it releases cortisol, which is a stress hormone. So you actually start to feel more stressed. What does cortisol do? That's your brain's way. You can think of it, it's preparing you to fight or flight, right? Your brain, psychological and physical danger are the same thing to your brain. It has the same reaction. So it releases cortisol, your heart pumps faster, blood is circulating faster, there's more oxygen to your lungs, your thighs actually get stronger. So your brain, that's a stress response. Your brain is preparing you to fight or flight. The second thing your brain does when it faces uncertainty is it starts to make up worst case scenario stories about the future. And so if you have, I think this is something we can all relate to always, but especially in the last couple of years, just constantly ruminating on the worst case scenario, right? Like everything has been so uncertain in our work lives and our personal lives that our brain is just constantly going through, oh my God, if I have to go back into the office, it's going to be terrible. I'm never going to see my family and the traffic is going to be really bad. Or if I don't go back into the office, I'm really going to be isolated forever and never connect with my team. I can tell you I always try to, you know, get really personal with you guys because I teach only things that resonate with me. As some of you know, we just dropped off our daughter, Mia, at college 3 weeks ago. I'm doing okay. She's doing great. So far, everyone's okay. But I don't think I slept for like 3 months leading into it because my mama brain, it was uncertain, right? We've never been apart that long. She's never, you know, been to college. So my brain just would keep me up with these worst case scenarios of, oh my God, what if she doesn't like her roommates? What if she doesn't like her professors? Like this constant rumination on negative thoughts. That is your brain's response to uncertainty. Why does it make up all these negative stories? Very simple. Because when it tells itself a story, a worst case scenario story, your brain thinks it is helping you get prepared for it. So let's think about all the bad things that could go wrong, all the things that could go wrong. And that means the brain is like, okay, I'm going to give myself certainty. I'll know what to do, but let's just focus on everything that's wrong. I mentioned when I was welcoming you all, we all have this negativity bias. It's the same reason as why uncertainty is hard. Your brain is just focused on your survival. So it's constantly looking out for what could go wrong because that's a possible sign for danger. So that's why when things are uncertain, we tend to really ruminate on negative thoughts and negative outcomes and what could go wrong. Your brain loves to make up stories. When we hear a story or tell a story, the pleasure center lights up in our brain. We love stories. And when things are uncertain, your brain loves to make up negative stories as in kind of like an effort to help itself feel more certain. So I think it's really, really essential. And I said, there's not going to be a quiz on the mini neuroscience part of this masterclass, but it is so important and has been so helpful for me to understand how your brain naturally, instinctively reacts to certain things like change, which is full of uncertainty, which is why it's also so hard. Because once you understand why your brain is reacting a certain way, you have an opportunity to shift. You have an opportunity to support yourself, to help your brain move forward in a way that is more helpful, that doesn't drain your energy on unnecessary stress, because I think we all have real stress to deal with, right? And that's where emotional fitness comes in. Because the way that I define emotional fitness is a skill of creating a more supportive relationship with your thoughts, your emotions, with yourself, and as a result, with other people. I'm going to say it again because it is so important. Emotional fitness is a skill of creating a more supportive relationship with yourself, your thoughts, your emotions, and with other people. Think about it kind of like a comparable to physical fitness, right? If you are, if you want to improve your physical fitness, right? What do? Well, you probably work out, you get some fresh air, you eat healthier. When you improve your physical fitness, what are you able to do now? You're able to now handle more physical challenges with less struggle. You're better able to handle physical challenges. The same thing with emotional fitness. When you improve your emotional fitness, you improve your inner resilience. You improve your ability to positively adapt amidst challenges and amidst uncertainty. That is the definition of resilience, by the way. I used to think that resilience was about being tough. You know, like I thought people who are resilient, they're just tough cookies. They don't let anything get to them. That is not what resilience is. In fact, research shows that the most resilient people experience all of their emotions, including the difficult emotions, really intensely. But what they know how to do is how to help themselves, how to support themselves to get through challenges in a way that they don't just survive, but that they're able to positively adapt. So again, resilience is your ability to positively adapt amidst uncertainty, amidst challenges. And the best way to improve your resilience, especially during uncertainty, is to boost your emotional fitness, to improve your relationship, the way you work with your brain, your thoughts, your emotions, to support yourself to get through these challenges and give yourself an opportunity to see things more clearly, to not waste your energy on things you can't control, so that you actually have enough energy to do the very hard things that we all have to do every day. So that's kind of the foundation of why emotional fitness and is so essential. So I'm going to dive in. I'm going to try to share three emotional fitness skills and practices to actually help you improve your resilience, to help you kind of course correct some of these ways that your brain reacts in a way that serves you better. But I see a question from Emily, and Emily, somehow my screen paused. And so, because my screen just scrolls through the questions. So I'm going to read it because I think you're asking something important on this part. Emily says, I'm not sure I'm making up negative stories, but perhaps the act of scenario planning, which is where our brain goes, is to protect us and our outcomes, is kind of the same. Emily, so there's a difference, actually great question. So there's a difference between thinking through possible scenarios, possible outcomes of something you're doing intentionally, and just your brain constantly ruminating on this could go wrong. What if this goes wrong? There's a really big difference between intentional scenario planning, intentionally thinking through how things can go. That is wonderful. That is useful. That is highly helpful. The constant, oh my God, what if this goes wrong? This is not going to work out. This will never work. This is going to go wrong, is not useful. That is your brain ruminating on the worst case scenario in an effort to protect you, in an effort to give certainty. It drains your energy. It increases anxiety. So there's a really huge difference between intentional planning for the future and thinking through the different things that can happen, and this kind of autopilot worst case rumination that happens to many of us. So great question. And I'm really glad I could clarify that. Okay, I think that's the only question so far. Okay, awesome. So let's dive in. And I'm getting really fancy. I don't think I've ever shared slides during our Awesome Human Hour, but I think some of this is useful. So I want to just give you, we don't have time to go through all five emotional fitness skills, but I want to kind of give you the high level overview. So there's kind of five key emotional fitness skills that I focus on in my work. And all of these are really essential and important for improving your emotional fitness and your resilience. As I said, I'm going to try to go through the first three today, which is acceptance, gratitude, and self-care. And then perhaps we can, if this masterclass, if you guys enjoy it, if you find it valuable, maybe we'll do a second part and we'll do intentional kindness, which also includes compassion and the bigger why. So that's kind of to give you a high level. And so I want to begin with the skill of acceptance. Let me say this. Acceptance is one of the most challenging emotional fitness skills in my experience, and now in my experience of teaching these to hundreds of thousands of awesome humans. It is also the gateway skill. And what I mean by that is we can't skip over it. It is that essential. So we're going to start with the hardest one, but also one that I think is so meaningfully impactful when it comes to helping us during uncertainty. So the way that I define acceptance, which is completely opposite to what I used to think of it as, I thought acceptance I don't know. I used to think acceptance is like, whatever happens, happens. Just go along with the flow. I don't know how to go along with the flow, you guys. I'm not kind of a go along with the flow kind of person. I'm like an active life participant. So I didn't like that definition. Well, I was ignorant. That is not what acceptance is. Acceptance is not passive. Acceptance is actually about getting into the driver's seat of your life, of your day, and choosing to focus your attention and your effort on what you can control and not wasting it on things you cannot. So my definition of acceptance, which is if you are here with us on Zoom, you can see it on a slide. My definition of acceptance is it's a skill of acknowledging whatever situation you're in and your feelings with clarity, instead of getting caught up in the story that your brain has created. And then using that clarity as your starting point to decide the best way forward. And don't worry, you don't have to memorize the definition. We're gonna go through a two-step lens of acceptance practice in a moment where I'm gonna actually show you the steps of how to practice getting to that clarity and then how to choose to move forward. So this is the skill of acceptance. And the thing I want to tell you about it before, I'm just scrolling my notes, before I give you like the tangible ways to practice it, is there are simply too many things at any given moment for your brain to focus on. They're too much. None of our brains can absolutely take in all the things and pay attention to all bits of information. And so the brain chooses what to focus on. And again, you already had a mini neuroscience lesson. And so you know that the brain is going to choose to focus on things that are negative more often than not, because negative stimuli indicates possible danger, right? If you see if you're crossing the street and you see a very quickly moving object swerving towards you, and you see the familiar outline of a car and you hear that swerving noise, that's a lot of negative stimuli. Your brain is paying attention to them, not the flowers on the side of the road, because that swerving car could kill you. If you miss looking at the pretty flowers, whatever. So your brain will default make choices of what to focus on because it cannot pay attention to everything. The other thing your brain will do is, we just talked about, especially when things are uncertain, it's going to make up a lot of stories. It is going to make up constant stories. In fact, I will go as far as to say your thoughts are not facts. Your thoughts are stories that your brain is making up based on incomplete information that it's choosing to focus on. Why am I telling you all this? Because the power of using the lens of acceptance is that you choose, you decide, and you tell your brain to focus on things that are facts that you know to be true versus stay in the story making area or focus on things you cannot control. You get to choose your mental lens. And when you practice acceptance, you are literally directing your brain, let's focus on the facts. Let's focus on what we know to be true. Let's focus on things I can control. And then use that as my baseline versus waste my energy on thinking this is not how it should be. This is going to go wrong, et cetera. That's the power of acceptance. So I want to give you I'm going to share my screen again because I want to go through the steps of acceptance. And then, and I see a lot of your comments that, yes, it's hard to tell what's real. The brain is making up stories. Yes, this is why we practice, you all. That's why we practice. I told you this is challenging, but this is so, so, so important. And Emily just posted that the skill of acceptance has been so powerful for her. I love hearing that. It is challenging, but it really is life-changing. So let's go through what I call, this is a practice I call the lens of acceptance. Why do I use this word, the lens? Again, your brain will choose where to pay attention to it. It's going to use its default lens of the negativity bias or a lens of, oh, it's always happened like this, so it's going to go like this. But you get to choose your mental lens. You get to choose the lens of where to focus your brain's attention. It is one of the most powerful choices we get to make in our day, in any moment. And with the lens of acceptance, you're literally, as I said, you're choosing to focus your brain's attention on what do we know to be true? What can we control? And not waste energy elsewhere. So here are the two steps to practice the lens of exception, the lens of acceptance. And for all of you who have a copy of my book, The Awesome Human Project, there's lots of details on it there. If you don't yet have my book, The Awesome Human Project, what are you waiting for? Obviously, it's awesome, but I really do encourage you to grab a copy because I go in a lot more detail on this practice and all the skills we're covering. So here are the two steps. Step one, acknowledge the situation with clarity. Whatever situation you're dealing with, acknowledge it with clarity. What does that mean? Well, it's really about being the editor of your thoughts and separating facts you know to be true from stories the brain has made up, right? So let's use the example that I gave when we were, you know, when my daughter, before we dropped her off at college, and my brain, I was so stressed out. There was so much uncertainty. Right. So how would I practice the lens of acceptance? I did it all the time, you guys, all the time. So what are the facts I knew to be true? The facts I knew to be true was that my daughter was going away to college. She was going to have to live with new people. She was going to meet lots of new professors. It was going to be a challenging experience for both of us. Those are the facts I knew to be true. A fact is something you can defend in a court of law. What someone else thinks is not a fact because none of you live in other people's heads. What were the stories my brain was making up? Well, my brain was making up all kinds of stories. Oh my God, she has never lived with roommates. She's an only child. She's going to totally freak out living with other people. What if she doesn't like the roommates? What if they don't get along? What if she gets professors who don't really care about her as a student and she has a really hard time? Like, those were some stories that my brain was making up. Obviously fiction. So in this first step, you just say to your brain, okay, what are the facts? And this is, as I mentioned, I'm working on an interactive journal based on my book. And I actually like give you templates to practice this. So you can do this on a piece of paper. You can do this right now. Pick a situation that has uncertainty that you're really worried about or thinking a lot about and do this first step. So literally make two columns, fact, stories. What are the facts you know to be true? Write them down. What are the stories? Put them in the stories column. And another really important part of the acknowledging the situation with clarity is just also to acknowledge your feelings with acceptance and not judgment. In my case, I was a mom. I was really worried. I was worried for her. I was worried for our relationship. It's really, really important to acknowledge and accept your feelings, including your difficult feelings, because that is going to guide you for how you can move forward with more support of yourself, right? So that's the first step. And the second step of the lens of acceptance is, okay, given here are the facts I know to be true, here's how I feel. Given that, what is the next best step that I could take? So given how things are and how I feel, what is one thing I could do right now to struggle less? What is one step I could do to move forward? And notice how the step doesn't say, how do I solve the situation? The power of the lens of acceptance, and most often when I apply it or when I teach it, we actually can't change the situation. What we can change is what we focus on. We can change our response towards ourselves. We can change how we interact with other people. And that's the power of this. So what did I do when I was practicing this before we dropped me off at college? Like, given these facts, what could I do to struggle less? One thing that's really powerful is to actually share my worry with her, right? And that's often really important when you're worried about something, share how you're feeling with someone else. When we share our feelings, which is not kind of giving a really long venting TED talk, that's for your, you know, maybe with your best friend, but just acknowledge and share how you're feeling. That really helps us to move through our difficult feelings. That's what I did. The other thing is we kind of talk through ways we would stay in touch. I got on Snapchat, everyone. Why did I get on Snapchat? Because when I talked to Mia that I was worried that we wouldn't be as close anymore, she was like, Mama, get on Snapchat. Like, that's where I communicate. So y'all, I can do Snapchat now. It's actually been a godsend because it's how she communicates. So we're sending videos to each other all the time. And then we like made a little, you know, we kind of acknowledged each other's stress. So that is how accept the lens of acceptance. Like I'm giving you a really tangible personal example of how it helped me. Could it change the situation? No. Could it like make sure that everything was going to be great? No. But it improved my resilience. It improved my ability to positively adapt through this very challenging experience. So again, I think it is such an important skill to practice. And I really, really encourage you to practice. It is not going to be easy because even though you are the editor of your thoughts, your brain is a really great creative writer. And it's going to try to convince you that its stories are true and are fact. So you have to be a really strict editor. You have to really keep going to these two steps. What are the facts I know to be true and how am I feeling? And let's separate out the stories. And given what I know to be true and given how I feel, what is one thing I could do to move forward with less struggle? And I really encourage you, I think this is such a powerful conversation and lens to use with our colleagues at work right now, with your team, right? Have this as a conversation with a colleague or a team, especially when someone is struggling with something, you know, let's talk about what are the things we know to be true in the situation? Okay, like talk this through together. Also great to do with your family members who might be struggling or our kids. I see a lot of people in the same boat with kids going off to college or school. So have the lens of acceptance as something that you can lead with others. Like, let's talk about like, what do we know to be true? And then how are you feeling? And then say, okay, so like given what's going on and how you're feeling, what's one thing you could do to support yourself to move through this? That's such a powerful conversation to have with people you lead, with your team as a whole. When I get to do keynotes or we get to work with teams, we do this. And there's just it's such an act of service and clarity and guidance that you can give to someone who might be struggling with a challenge or uncertainty at work or in your personal life to just take them through those two steps. And again, as I mentioned, the skill of acceptance is the most powerful skill when it comes to choosing the mental lens through which we see our day and our challenges. And when it comes to choosing to focus on things that we can control and not waste our energy on things we cannot control. So that's acceptance. Probably the skill that takes the longest to explain. So I think we can get through gratitude and self-care. And then I'll try to answer your questions. So again, if you have questions, pop it into Q&A at the bottom of your screen, easiest place for us to see them. So let's talk about gratitude, the second skill. I'm going to share my screen and define gratitude for you, but I don't think I need to. But just to be, you know, clear, gratitude is a skill of making an active choice to notice the small positive moments in everyday life, even when times are challenging, especially when times are challenging, and sharing your appreciation and gratitude for other people with them. And gratitude is the most powerful skill that I know of to help balance out your brain's natural negativity bias. And there's literally mountains of research that show that when people are going through really challenging life events, I think this pandemic counts as one, people who practice gratitude are much more resilient. They experience much less post-traumatic stress disorder. They actually are able to move through challenging experience with, again, not just to make it through, but thrive. So gratitude is such an essential skill to regularly practice right now, because we all have a lot of negative memories stored up from the last couple of years, a lot of stress. And negativity begets negativity. So when you're already thinking negative thoughts, it invites many more negative thoughts because your brain kind of chooses a path of least resistance. So gratitude is such a powerful skill to balance out your negativity bias. So in essence, when you practice gratitude, you're saying to your brain, hey, listen, brain, I know that there are things in my life that are challenging. Absolutely. But there are also things that are okay or good or meaningful or comforting or kind or loving or beautiful. And what that does is it helps your brain have a clearer, more even, more honest, more realistic emotional picture of your life. And it actually gives you that resilience to keep going and do the hard stuff. So I want to share with you a gratitude practice that I don't think I've shared with our community. But it is, I think, a really powerful one right now. I call it, and if you follow me on social media, you see me practice this a lot out loud. And if you don't follow me, you should. I'm a good follow, someone said the other day. I am at Natalie Kogan on Instagram, where I post daily. I post short videos, tips, how I'm practicing, and also at Natalie Kogan on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, all the things. But Instagram is probably where I am most often. So here's the practice, gratitude antidote. Very simple. When you notice that you're really stressed out, or you catch yourself kind of ruminating on this loop of negative thoughts, acknowledge how you feel. It's really, really important. Acknowledge, like, wow, this is really stressing me out right now. And then think of a few specific things that you are grateful for. Okay, so acknowledge how you're feeling and then say, okay, I'm really stressed out about this right now, but here are a couple of things I'm grateful for and a couple of tips to make this practice effective. I'm not asking you to be grateful for the stressful thing. Okay. You can be grateful for other things. I'm not going to be that cruel. The most important thing is be really specific with things you are grateful for. So don't be general. Don't, you know, you've heard me, if you've heard me speak, you've heard me say this because it's so, so important. So, you know, I'm grateful for my family. I'm grateful for my health, blah, blah, blah. That's too general for your brain, right? Be really specific. Like, oh, I did it this morning. Really, really stressed out about the deadline for my journal coming up really soon. And I have a lot to do, but I am really grateful that the weather is wonderful and I get to look at beautiful green trees still. I'm really grateful that my husband got my morning coffee ready, which is an act of kindness he does every morning. I am really grateful that I can kind of have a group of people like all of you to share what I'm working on. Like, those were things that I thought of. And the power of this practice is it doesn't eliminate the challenge. It doesn't like remove the stress, but it really helps your brain to even out. And it is a best wonderful interruption of the negativity thought loop. And so I really encourage you to practice this gratitude antidote. I encourage you to talk about this with your team at work, with your colleagues, right? When you catch, you know, as I mentioned, our brain has a lot of inertia, right? That's why when you have a rough morning, you have a rough day. It's not because you're a horrible human being and you can't snap out of it. I hate when people say that. It is because the human brain has a lot of inertia. If you're going in one direction of thought, the brain is just going to slide along. Your brain wants to pick the path of least resistance. And so, the negative thought loop is a real thing. One negative thought, one stressful thought, it can just really create this negativity spiral. When you practice the gratitude antidote, you help yourself reverse the spiral. You literally help your brain not spin out into that negativity spiral. So you save yourself wasted energy. You actually give yourself the energy to deal with the stressful thing, the negative thing. So I really encourage you, you know, just like our individual brains have inertia, teams have inertia too. And so, you know, I've worked with a lot of leaders and this is a practice I've been teaching them right now. Like if you find that your team at work is in this like negativity thought spiral, like this is going wrong and this is going wrong and we're not working well enough and this team is unhappy with us, that is not helpful. And so acceptance is first, but then say, okay, so these are challenges along our path. Guys, what are we grateful for? And practice this together as a team so you can really help to on a team level as well. And you can also practice this with others, but the one thing that's really important is you can't make someone practice this, you can encourage, right? So it's really invalidating if you have a colleague or a friend who's really struggling to be like, hey, don't be stuck in struggle, think of things you are grateful for. Not that any of you would do that, but don't do that. We don't want to invalidate someone's experience, but you want to acknowledge their feelings first. And then you could share some of what I shared and said, you know, it's really stressful. Is there anything in this day that's okay? Is there anything that is comforting to you? You can gently guide your colleague or your friend along this practice, but I would never, ever be like, hey, stop being so negative, practice gratitude. That's like positivity police. You're not going to find it here. Okay. So that's gratitude. Ooh, we have 15 minutes. I'm going to do self-care and then I'll take some questions. Okay. I'm actually very, very surprised at myself that I can, because I have so much to say on these practices. Okay. We've talked about acceptance. We've talked about gratitude as a way, as practices to really help you improve your ability to positively adapt to challenges versus waste your energy. Let's talk about self-care. And self-care, again, I'm kind of on my own little one-person mission. Well, forget, not one person. I speak to tens of thousands of people every month. We're all together on a mission to rebrand self-care away from a luxury, away from something you get to do once you take care of everybody else and get all your to-dos done. That is not self-care. Self-care is a skill of fueling your emotional, mental, and physical energy. That is what self-care is. You are a human being. You're not a superhuman. I think even superhumans have limited energy, right? But as a human being, every single thing you do requires energy. Every single thing. Listening to me right now requires energy. Me talking to you requires energy. Everything we do requires energy. So self-care is not a luxury. It is not selfish. It is not sometimes. It is not optional. It is a fundamental skill to ensure that you have enough emotional, mental, and physical energy to do all the hard things you need to do. You cannot have resilience without self-care. And I'm going to give you my favorite analogy, which again, many of you probably have heard, but I love it. I put it in my book when I was writing it because it like dawned on me. Like if you have a car, right? You know that the car needs fuel to do its job of being a car, right? Gasoline or electricity. So I drive a Mini, still has gas. So I know that my Mini needs gas to do its job of being a car. Right? When my Mini runs out of gas or when it's running low on gas, do I ever sit there? Like when your car runs low on gas, let me ask you a question. Do you ever sit there and go, well, I don't know. Does the car deserve more gas? Has it done enough to get more gas? Has my car accomplished enough to get more gas? Has it been nice to other cars to get more gas? No. By the way, if any of you do this, we need to have a separate talk. That's like a separate private conversation. You do not do that. Why you don't do that? Because you know that gas or electricity is essential. Your car cannot do its job of being a car without gas. You cannot do your job of being a human without energy. So self-care is not an optional thing. It is not a sometimes thing. It is a daily skill to make sure that you have enough energy to do all the things you need to do. And I want to share, again, this is a daily practice that I do. It is a daily practice that I would love to make part of your daily routine for yourself and with your teams and your colleagues. Very simple. I call it a Mini fuel up because I love the idea that I go to a fuel pump. Like my car goes to a gas fuel pump and I go to like an energy fuel pump. Like I got to fuel up my energy. I love that concept. It gives me, it takes it out of this like luxury thing. It's like, hey, I need fuel. So I'm going to do my Mini fuel up. Here's how to do it. Schedule 10 to 30 minutes on your calendar every day. If all you have is 10 is great. If you have half an hour, great. Somewhere in between is also great. But put it on your calendar, please. If it's not on your calendar, it is not real. If it's not on my calendar, it's not real. So put it on your calendar and make this a daily promise to yourself, a daily commitment. We are much better as human beings at keeping our promises and commitments to others. Many of us are really terrible at keeping promises and commitments to ourselves. So I want you to be really intentional. Like what I do is when I put it on my calendar for the following day, I literally say, Natalie of tomorrow, like tomorrow, Natalie, I'm making a promise to you that I'm going to do this. So actually take that extra step. And when that time comes, first, just take a moment, check in with yourself, like ask yourself, how am I feeling? Like, how is my energy today? And then based on that, think about like, what is something I could do 10 minutes, 15 minutes, 5 minutes, 30 minutes? What is something that I could do to refuel my energy and recharge? And if at all possible, please take a walk outside. A 5-minute walk outside, research shows, boosts your focus, boosts your mood, boosts your energy, boosts your motivation. It is so powerful. If you can't take a walk outside, take a walk inside where you are. And one of the most important things about this practice, because it is really, really easy to be like, okay, now I'm going to take a break from work. And then you're sitting at your desk and okay, I'll just scroll social media. Or maybe you're even trying to take a real break, but your brain is like, whoa, wait, but hold on, but I got to do this. I got to do this. There's work stuff. You have to create a separation. You have to help your brain disconnect from work so you can actually take a recharge break. And the best way to do that is one,
step away from the screen. So actually change your position. Like, don't keep sitting in the same place. Get up and walk away. And second is create a little ritual to start your mini fuel up. And this is, I'm not going to go into it because I do want to take some of your questions, but I've been researching the placebo effect. It's my latest, I'm always doing some kind of independent research reading and really fascinated with the ability to use the placebo effect, which is getting your brain to do something without kind of external medication. I'm really fascinated for how we can use it to help our mental and emotional health. And so create a little ritual to begin your mini fuel up the same way every time. So one of the things, I'm going to give you an example to explain what I mean. One of my little mini fuel ups that I do every morning is before I start my workday, I get a cup of coffee and I have this big red chair in my office that I really love. And I sit in the big red chair with my cup of coffee and I read a couple pages from a fiction book that has nothing to do with work. 10 minutes. Always do the same thing for my morning fuel up. Now what happens is as soon as I get into that chair at any time, my body relaxes, my brain relaxes. Why? The placebo effect. I have conditioned my brain that when I'm in the red chair with a cup of coffee, relax. You don't need a red chair. Any little ritual, if you do it consistently, will have the same effect. So maybe every time you do your mini fuel up, before you do it, you close your laptop, you get up, and you walk out of the room. Wonderful. If you do that every single time and then you take a break, eventually, anytime you close your laptop and walk out of the room, your brain is going to immediately disconnect. It takes time. It takes effect for the conditioning of the brain to take effect. But think about it. What is a tiny little ritual? Again, maybe it's like grabbing your favorite coffee cup and closing your laptop. Maybe it's, you know, going outside and, you know, taking 5 deep breaths. But if you begin your fuel up with the same little ritual every time, over time, as soon as you do that ritual, the placebo effect kicks in and it's going to help your brain relax and kind of like downshift from the go, go, go. So this is your third practice. So let's just quickly review. And again, if you have questions, if you're here on Zoom, please put them into the Q&A. I've tried to answer some questions I've seen in chat as I was talking. So hopefully I've covered a lot, but let's just recap. And I'm just going to one last time share my screen just to recap the skills we've talked about. Ooh, we did cover a lot. So we talked about 3 emotional fitness skills to boost your resilience during challenge and uncertainty. The first skill we talked about is the skill of acceptance, which is all about acknowledging the situation and your feelings with clarity, focusing on the facts, focusing on acknowledging how you feel, instead of getting caught up in the story your brain has created. And then using that clarity to ask yourself, given how things are and how I feel, what is one thing I could do to move forward with less struggle? Then we talked about gratitude, which is a skill of making an active choice to notice the small positive moments in everyday life, even when times are challenging, and sharing your gratitude with others. And then we talked about self-care, which is a skill of fueling your emotional, mental, and physical energy. And I really hope that you all take this mini fuel up practice and make it part of your everyday. So these are, I've given you 3 skills and 3 practices. You can choose one, you can choose 2, but I really want you to make a promise to yourself to practice them, to encourage people you work with, to introduce them to others. But you have to begin with a commitment to yourself, because as you've heard me say a lot, you cannot give what you don't have. You have to fuel your resilience first before you help others. So I know we have a few questions. I'm going to invite Debbie to put her camera on, say hi. She's going to read your questions to me. So you don't have to sit here and listen to me try to go and scroll and look for your questions. I'm going to spotlight Debbie for everybody who's on Zoom. I think I've done it. Okay, I have. Hi, Debbie in New York.
Hi, Natalie. Hi, everyone. It's so good to be with everyone today. And I know we have so many new people who have joined us today. So I want to tell all of you, and some people have asked, that you're going to receive the recording tomorrow. That's one of the benefits of signing up through Zoom, is that you get the recording the next day by email and links about anything that Natalie has talked about. Also, one of the benefits is that you get a reminder for when the next monthly Awesome Human Hour is. And I want to tell all of you that next month's Awesome Human Hour is on October 12th, Wednesday at our regular time. You'll get a reminder a week in advance and as well as week of.
So wait, can I quickly, because I know we have a few, I just want to quickly tell you next month's Awesome Human Hour is kind of awesome. They're all kind of awesome, but I'm going to be interviewing a former FBI hostage negotiator. He was one of the most long-serving FBI hostage negotiators. We're going to be talking about listening, and he interviewed me when my book came out and I learned so much. So we're going to be talking about, he's going to be sharing like how to really listen and more. But anyway, I'm really excited. Okay, Debbie, over to you.
So Natalie, I think it's so cool that today is National Gratitude Day.
Oh, cool. Who knew?
Right? As you're talking about gratitude. And I want to express a gratitude to Sonia Gray, whose birthday is tomorrow. And Sonia is a longtime follower of Natalie's. And Sonia is someone who leads these skills in her life. She is an emotional fitness leader. And we are so grateful for you, Sonia. I'm going to start with, I think we're going to get two questions in, Natalie. And one of them is about what you just talked about, which is self-care. And someone asked for some suggestions for rituals to mark the beginning of a self-care moment. I love this question.
It's a great question, and especially of all my like focus on the placebo effect. So, okay. So here are a couple of suggestions. The key thing is that the ritual, it's got to have like a little bit of a unique element, right? So it's not something you do all the time. Okay. So like me getting into my red chair with a big cup of coffee, that's a unique thing. I don't do that all day long. So it signals to my brain, oh, she's in the red chair. She's going to do something relaxing. Let's help her relax. So some ideas, right? So I love hot beverages, especially now that it's getting chillier. So think of like, maybe you have a favorite mug. And you say to yourself, I'm only going to use this mug for tea or coffee or whatever you want to use it for. I'm only going to use it for my mini fuel up. And maybe you begin by closing your laptop or computer and then taking the mug in your hand and then going to make yourself a little beverage, right? It's simple, but that mug begins to signify to your brain that, oh, it's time to relax. Maybe, and I do this with my audiences, I actually did this, I did a keynote last week with some awesome women executives in LA, and it was a keynote and a workshop, so it's kind of long. So in between, I was like, let's do a mini fuel up. And so you could also do something physical, right? So I did like a 3-minute Qigong practice with them, which maybe one awesome human hour we should all do. But you could think of doing something physical. So like get up and do 10 jumping jacks, or get up and do like a couple yoga poses, or maybe you get up and just like take some deep breaths, but again, do the same thing every time, because what you're doing is you're having this little ritual, then you take your break. And so you're telling your brain, whenever I do this ritual, it's time to disconnect and relax. And so those are some really good ideas. Judy says she gets up and dances, whatever it is, but it is really important that this little ritual, you only do that ritual when you begin your mini fuel up. Great question. Let's do one more. I'll answer it really, really fast.
Okay, great. So someone asked a question about how acceptance and the skills in general can help overcome self-doubt.
It's a great question. I definitely cannot answer that question quickly because self-doubt is a whole thing. I do encourage you, and this is not a sales pitch. About a third of my book is about using these skills for self-doubt and self-criticism. So I know it's really important. And some people have asked me self-doubt and self-criticism and how to help, huge part of the journal I'm working on. But the thing I'll tell you is I'll kind of leave you with this. And I actually shared this on Instagram the other day, which is another plug to connect there because I address all this there. But, you know, self-doubt is your brain on fear. And we began by talking about your brain on fear. We have to understand that, you know, if you're doing something new or challenging, your brain is going to doubt because it has fear, because you don't know how it's going to work out. So there's uncertainty, right? We talked about that at the beginning. So self-doubt is your brain on fear. And you have to think about, what is it that I can do to help my brain feel a little bit safer, right? And so I have self-doubt all the time, and I'll just close with this. You know, I'm working on this interactive journal. I'm illustrating the entire thing myself. In fact, the entire journal is handwritten and illustrated by me. And I'm creating all these, like, I have never done this before. Okay. And I'm not a, you know, I paint, but I'm not an illustrator. And so I have so much self-doubt, like, what if it's not that valuable? What if people don't find it useful? All that kind of stuff. And so that's my brain on fear. It's uncertain, so it has fear. And what I say back to my brain is, I kind of try to make it feel safer by saying, look, these are practices I use every day. So I know they're helpful to me, so I bet they'll be helpful to others. And one last thing that is really, really just as a last thing on self-doubt, we didn't talk about the bigger why, and I've had some questions. We should do another masterclass with other skills. But you know what really helps with self-doubt? Focusing less on yourself and focusing more on how what you're doing helps others. So that is how I make my self-doubter about my work and my journal go really, really quiet, is instead of like, what will people think of me and my journal and my work and my stuff? How does what I'm working on, how does it help others? How might it help someone who needs support or encouragement or a nudge in the right direction? And you can hear it in my voice. The moment you shift out of the me-focused thinking and the fear and into what I call self-transcendence, something beyond you, how does what I'm doing help others? That's the bigger why. That's using the skill of the bigger why. The self-doubt gets really, really, really quiet. I love being able to end on that. Thank you, Debbie, for arranging the questions. I know you always, there's always genius to Debbie asking me questions in a certain way. Thank you all so much for being. Thank you for being here. Thank you for making time for you to focus on yourself, to support yourself, to learn skills to support yourself. I'm really, really, really grateful that we have this incredible community that I get to serve you. You are my bigger why, whether I've never met you or I've seen you here for the last 3 years. And I'm really, really grateful for this opportunity to share these skills that have changed my life, that have helped me through the darkest times, with you. I would love to know what you think. You will get a recording email, as Debbie mentioned. You will get a recording email tomorrow if you register on Zoom. You can always reply. It doesn't go into a black box. It goes right back to us. I would love to know what you think. I would love to know which skill you're taking away. I would love to know how you're practicing. That is like when I get really high. That's my high, you guys. That's my drug. You know what drugs I'm on? Knowing how people are practicing these practices. And yes, you will get the recording. Yes, you can share. A couple of people have asked, you can share the recording. Watch it as a team. Send it to your colleagues. Send it to your friends. Absolutely. This is the reason we wanted to do this masterclass, is these, you know, as I said, I do a lot of keynotes and workshops, and Debbie and I do a lot of happier work programs with companies, but I wanted to offer this for free so it's accessible, so you can share with anyone who you think will be useful. And I hope to see you here next month for our Awesome Human Hour, which will be in October. We're doing them as a reminder. We do them monthly. It's a really good idea to register, because that's how you get a reminder email letting you know when it is. And then you get a reminder and email an hour before with the convenient link. I will see you all in various places. Thank you for making time for you. Thank you, Debbie. And I hope you all have a wonderful rest of your day. Take care.
All right, awesome humans. I hope you enjoyed this week's episode of the Awesome Human Podcast. And I would love to know what resonated. What questions do you have? What are you excited to practice? So send us an email to team@happier.com. And please rest assured, if you send an email that you'd love for me to read, I will always get it in my inbox. My team will send it to me. Let's stay in touch so you can keep practicing skills to help you struggle less and thrive more in work and life. The best way to do it is to go to happier.com and subscribe to my weekly newsletter. I promise you, I would never send you spam. It's just more practices, skills, and stories to help you embrace your inner awesome human. I can't wait to see you next week.